2FM.
The Welsh scrum superior, Alex Popham, this time will score the try. The Fijians couldn't hang on, and Alex Popham scores the first for the Welsh, acknowledges the role that his fellow forwards played, and that's 25-8.
That was Welsh international Alex Popham, a ferocious competitor on the pitch, an abrasive and brave back rower who never took a backward step. But since his retirement from rugby, he's been faced with the biggest battle of his life. Alex has been diagnosed with early onset dementia, and he joins us now. Alex, how are you?
Good evening. Yeah, not too bad in wet Wales.
Yeah, I know you're there with your wife, Mel. Mel, who are you?
Hi, I'm good, thank you.
Alex, we'll chat about, you know, your emotional and mental well-being shortly. But physically, I know from playing against you, you've always been in top condition and you're going to need to be at the moment. You've some big challenges coming up physically.
Yeah, definitely. We've got the Rugby Ride Challenge on Zwift taking place on the 6th and 7th of March to raise funds for our charity Head for Change. It's a 24-hour challenge, and you can sign up for Team Wales, Ireland, Scotland, England, or the rest of the world. And you don't have to take part in the full 24 hours, so don't worry about that. You could take part in 2-hour slots. I'm doing the full 24 hours. Right. We've got Geraint Thomas on Team Wales, so we've got an advantage there.
That's handy.
There's over 100 ex-internationals from around the world taking part. We've got Simon Easterby, the current Irish forwards coach, you know, defence coach now, taking part.
Paul Wallace,
Bernard Jackman. So we need some more Irish players involved, but also the general public are more than welcome to sign up to
get on the bike and cycle your miles to Ireland.
Donners, what are you doing?
I'm not doing a whole lot. I'm there if needed.
No, but I'm
basically just ask you. So, I mean, you're obviously committing yourself to it there now.
Absolutely. I don't think I'd be able to manage 24 hours, and it's quite handy that it's on Zwift because I think I would pick up about 12 punctures.
Well, it's actually you get 5 minutes in between each stage, so it's not the full 24 hours. You do get a 5 minute wee break in between.
That's nice of you.
As long as he's fed, he'll be happy. That's all that Donica cares about.
That's Mel's job.
That's my job today. Refreshments and entertainment.
Alex, just we're going to go through the challenges that are ahead of you very, very shortly, but just in terms of the work that you're doing as well and you know, kind of shining a spotlight on dementia and your own early onset dementia, how important is that for you to put yourself out there, to talk about it and to share your story and to do things like this?
Oh, it's hugely important. When I had my diagnosis in April and I had sat on this Mel for 9-12 months and not spoken to my parents, Mel's parents, they were brothers and sisters, and I just thought to myself, I can't be going through this alone. And speaking with boys I played with, it worked out I wasn't, and unfortunately there's quite a few boys struggling, and it's about helping those, and that's what the foundation is about, because all the information out there on dementia is for granddads, people 60 plus, not for 40-year-olds.
I think everybody, Alex, was taken aback by your age and just how young you are, you know, like just early 40s. It just sounds so crazy that something like this could happen to somebody so young, and it does, and you're doing a great thing highlighting it. But just your first experiences of it, when did you start to get a little bit worried or realise something was amiss?
I think Mel would be the best one to answer that, because I was most probably putting it off of it.
Yeah, I think, where are we now? 2021. Alex, I first forced Alex to the doctor in September 2019. But that was on the back of that year, really, leading up to that, me noticing some real characteristic differences in Alex's behaviour that had no real explanation. And Alex was sort of putting it down to, you know, it's stress, it's work, you know, but I knew there was something deeply wrong. And my biggest fear was I actually thought he had a brain tumour when I pushed him to seeing the GP and going to the initial tests. And we were completely shocked and floored last April with the diagnosis we actually received. But it was things, you know, his short-term memory, mixing up words, forgetting a conversation we'd had 20 minutes earlier, concentration, focus, emotional outbursts, particularly irritability, which were really out of character for Alex. We've been friends for 30 years. We went to school together. So I knew these weren't, you know, this just wasn't Alex. I knew that there was something wrong, but didn't know what it was at the time.
Alex, we all come away from the games and we probably accept that we're going to pick up knocks and we won't probably move like we used to, but to have an injury that affects your personality must be so difficult.
Yeah, it is. But since my diagnosis, I'm always a person who's half full, or now says more than half full in my outlook in life. And knowing now, and the things we've put in place with changing my diet to a 95% Mediterranean diet, so I'm only allowed one steak a week, exercising, I signed up to do an Ironman, that has a big benefit to my well-being, but also to the blood flow and the oxygen going to the brain, so hopefully that will slow down the progression of this, and just trying to look at it as positive as possible, really.
I was kind of thinking about a Mediterranean diet there and thinking, could be a few bottles of rosé involved in that, but obviously not with the sounds of the diet you're on.
Alcohol is the other thing, and actually Al had given that up before his diagnosis. Interestingly, and his neurologist at his diagnosis says that was the best thing he could have done for himself because of the effect on alcohol and the brain and inflammation. And so our priority is slowing this degeneration and dragging this out for as long as we possibly can. So, you know, sugar's completely out of your diet now. And we've learned a lot in the last 9 months, which is the knowledge is power in that respect.
Alex or Mel, whichever one you would like to answer, but I was just looking at the figures and the doctors estimated that you had somewhere in the region of 100,000 sub-concussions. And I was thinking about that from my own point of view. I used to be a jockey. I'm 41 years of age as well. I've kind of lived for 14,900 odd days. That's about 6 concussions per day or sub-concussions per day of my life or your life. How did they come to that number? Or what did they reckon was...
The math on that.
It's the analytics of Alex's, you know, lifespan of his professional career, his playing career, and particularly looking at, you know, his training. It's not just the matches. It's a lot of that contact. Those concussions occurred in contact in training. And looking at how many... hits you were targeted to make per session. What do you call it, Al? Sorry, I'm not using the rugby language there.
Just contacts in tackling people, being tackled, hitting rucks, being wiped out of rucks, driving mauls. All those contacts are causing small amounts of damage.
Which, because it's a cumulative effect, ultimately, and 85% of those 100,000 sub-concussions, they estimate, occurred in training. And when I ran the maths on that, being a bit of a maths geek, I just thought, hang on, there's something we could do here and do very quickly and easily in rugby without hugely affecting the game on a Saturday, but to protect the players.
So you look at
the NFL.
Yeah, the NFL 10 years ago reduced the amount of contact they do to 15 in training to 15 sessions a season. They predominantly do those contact sessions in pre-season. So during the season, the boys are fresh. There's hardly any injuries from the contact, and they're ready to go come Saturday or whatever day they play.
The brain is then getting rested, and that was the way it was explained to us with Alex. His brain at times of his career was constantly inflamed. He was a big physical player, as we all know. There's a lot we can learn, and moving forward, it's our priority with this. We both still love rugby, and we want to protect the players, protect the current and the future players, but protect the game is just as important to us.
Look, Alex, you had a fairly long career. You played for Leeds Tykes in England. You were in France. You played with Brive, Wales. You played with the Scarlets, roughly 250 games, 33 caps for Wales in your professional career. That's 283 games. So you're saying by limiting the contact in training and trying to make that more for match time could hugely reduce the exposure. to these injuries.
Definitely. And the sooner we can do that, the better for the current players.
And the rest of the bodies Al knew when he signed up, he happily signed up to, you know, walk away with the shoulder injury he did, etc. But it would also have an impact on protecting more of those day-to-day injuries as well as the head injuries, I think.
Because we have protocols in place now for things like HIA when we see someone being knocked clearly out. But Mel, it's those sub-concussions that we can't really see and that probably don't manifest straight away. I know from my own case that, you know, you could be symptomatic maybe 3 days later. And
absolutely.
Just for you there, Mel, like sometimes I didn't understand it till we got educated a little bit more, but there is traits that, you know, are symptomatic of concussions, like being irritable, grumpy, you know, were these things you noticed?
Yeah, I think Alex, until his diagnosis, was of the misunderstanding that concussion meant being out cold. Mm. As we've learned, 90% of concussions to the brain occur when you're conscious. And as you rightly said, there's an array of other symptoms, concentration, irritability, other things. It's not all always about being sick and dizzy. Education is another key purpose of the foundation that we're a part of and we founded, because and all stakeholders being educated there, not just the people playing the game, but everyone around them as well, and knowing what to look out for. And there's so much more we can do to educate people and then as I say, protect the players' brains a bit better, but protect the game we all love.
It's not funny, but just in a hypothetical way, from listening to Dunica for the last couple of years talking about concussions and things like that in racing, we always knew the difference. You're either unconscious or concussed, and there was a huge difference between both, because to be concussed walking around and not quite knowing what you were doing but heading about your business. So if you were getting sub concussions, Alex, on the pitch, when you would get up from a ruck or get cleaned out of a ruck or make a tackle, did you feel in any way dizzy, in any way groggy? Did you notice anything at all with each contact?
I can't really remember a lot of my career with regards. I just knew that if you did take a bang and you weren't out and it was just a bit of like heaviness, you just had some sniffing salts and carry on. That's what was done when I was playing. And I just think for what we want to get across is limit as much of the contact that the boys are still doing as possible. And the boys, this will hopefully happen to as many boys in the future. And it's simple things like that. We want to bring in MOTs for players. So when they sign their first professional contract, they get base tested, the whole body, but including that is the brain scan. And then every year that is done like boxers have, which will make the game even safer.
And Mel, I think hearing stories like Alex is really important for people to take concussion and a head injury and just that excess amount of contact seriously. And you did a BBC interview recently, and it was really heartbreaking to hear you talking about the worries that you have for the future for Alex.
Yeah, I think, you know, this has turned our world upside down, as you can imagine. We had big plans for the future. We were planning a second baby ourselves. We've sort of had to make decisions to change all of that, but I've made my life's mission now to really try and change that prognosis we've been given. Neither Alex or I are willing to accept there's no cure, there's no treatment. We're looking at a 5 to 10 year management plan. When I'm looking at my 2-year-old daughter, I can't accept that. We've got to do something here. And another part of the foundation is research and bringing together the best brains in science and research globally on this. We've discovered in the last 9 months, through doing a lot of my own research and digging with the other trustees, there's some incredible work going on around the world in this area, in brain health, in interventions, etc. But they're working in silos. And people in different areas don't necessarily know what others are working on until things get published. So, you know, we'd love to, and that's going to be something coming out in the press next week, big announcement with our research part. That's a global initiative. But it's a call to action of, you know, anyone who's got any interest or knowledge in this area, come forward and be part of the solution and work together. You know, the brain is the person, ultimately, is the bit that sort of I keep coming back to. Without that, there is no person.
And I think without the stories as well, like the human stories, the real life examples, the likes of you, Alex, and in that BBC interview as well, just hearing you speak about your children and having to tell them, how do you tell your children something like that?
Well, that was why we actually thought the foundation first started back at the end of April, because there was nowhere for me to go. As Alex has mentioned, I sort of, you know, Google wasn't my friend at the time, and I started looking, you know, how do you tell two teenage stepdaughters about this? And there was nothing available to me. It, dementia is seen as an elderly person's disease, mainly, predominantly, and these are grandparents who have often grown-up children or who are retired. You know, we have companies to run, we have day jobs to do, we have young children to look after. So I was like, what on earth do I do? And I've been in some very tough board meetings, tough business meetings throughout my own career, and I'm not scared of a tough conversation. That conversation with Holly and Isabel is still one of the hardest I've ever had to have in my life. And that for me is something that I know we can help others and make a difference here. And one of the things we're going to do with Head for Change is connect these children and teenagers of the players affected. So they've got a peer group to talk to of people walking in their shoes who get it, you know. And
Isabel, my middle daughter, she had only told one person one friend about my diagnosis, because she didn't know how to approach it with a friend. So part of the foundation, we want to have the children feel comfortable talking about what's happened to dad, and then feel at ease in that environment.
And it's that peer-to-peer that they're there to help for each other, you know, from different families.
And even from my perspective, I'd had my own health issues in 2019, because I'd been bottling up all this emotional stress of what was going on in life, not even talking to our own families. And it was actually Frankie Lipman, Michael Lipman's wife, and I connected last year, and it was like kindred spirits. Our first phone call from Wales to Australia was 2.5 hours, and she used the phrase, "Oh my God, I'm speaking to somebody walking in my shoes now."
Yeah.
And in some ways, the relief, the reassurance, the being able to talk to. So another part we've created is our sort of family friend network for the wives, the partners, the people supporting these guys, the family around them.
Alex, we know the rugby network is quite tight. We go out and we knock lumps out each other, but when you come away from the game, it is quite supportive. Have you had much contact from ex-pros?
It's been unbelievable. The generosity, the love, the support. Yeah. People just want to help out, and that is the amazing thing about rugby. All my friends across the globe, living in New Zealand, Australia, Canada, have just said, how can they help? And that's the special thing about rugby. It connects people and friendships for life, and that's why we still love the game. And want to get involved, want to raise money to help this great cause in Head for Change.
Alex, are you nervous? I read you said you don't want to be a burden on anyone. Just, you know, what's coming ahead? How are you about it?
I try not to think about it, if I'm honest. I'm trying to just think about the positive things I've got going on. I've got to learn to swim for the Ironman, so that's a big pressure.
I think, being honest, and Al is incredibly, incredibly brave. It took them 3 months to convince me to speak out and do the BBC pieces we did last year, but I had to do it for Alex because he was willing to be brave and do that. But we'd had 8 months by then coming to terms with the diagnosis, but I'll be really honest with you, in December it hit us like a truck again. And we had to take some downtime, just us as a family, at Christmas, because the reality that we are facing isn't going away, and we can invest our time and energy into all these positives and make the best of this bad situation, but that fear doesn't go away. And if I'm honest, there are sleepless nights that we both have, worrying about the future and what that looks like and what that means, particularly the children.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, Mel and Alex, thanks so much for joining us on Game On. We can't put into words what you must be going through, but we know in any way we can support and help, we certainly will. Thanks so much for joining us on Game On. Thanks so much.
Green Farm, healthy snacking made easy with Green Farm's high protein on the go range, available in selected Tesco, Super Value, and convenience stores nationwide.